Please state your name.
Verdi Ellingson. You want me to spell it?
Yes.
Verdi is V-E-R-D-I-E. Ellingson, E-L-L-I-N-G-S-O-N.
Thank you. And what era, military?
I served with the occupation forces in Korea between World War II and the Korean War. But I served prior to December 31st, 1946, so I'm considered a World War II veteran.
I see. In what branch?
I was in the Army.
In the Army. Okay.
Signal Corps.
Verdi, where were you born and raised?
I was born and raised in the rural Montevideo, Minnesota.
And what did your family do?
They were farmers.
Okay. Did you finish high school in Montevideo?
I finished high school in Milan. Okay. The reason I went to Milan, it was about the same distance as Montevideo, but Milan sent a school bus that came right by our farm. And so it was natural for us to go to that high school.
What did you do after high school?
Okay, that's the part of the story that I wanted to be sure you understood, and why I'm considered a World War II veteran. I graduated from high school in May of 1942. The war started in terms of our participation in it with the bombing of Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941. My older brother, Orville, had been drafted in October, 2 months before the war started. My next brother, older brother, enlisted in the Marines in January of 1942. When I finished high school in May of 1942, in my mind I was thinking I will probably be drafted or do what a lot of my friends were doing, volunteering for the Air Force or the Navy or Marine Corps, whatever branch that you might want to serve. However, in my case, the draft board said, you can't be drafted. You are needed to work on the farm. By now, they began to realize, hey, wait a minute. We can't take all of the boys off the farm. Mm-hmm. Someone has to be there to run the farms. Mm-hmm. And in my case, my dad was 66 years of age, and he had a chronic asthma condition, which made some aspects of farming very difficult for him to do. So the draft board said, you need to stay home until such time as your brothers return from the military. And then you will not be drafted. So when I finished high school in May, that's what I did. I took over the farm and with my dad. Yeah. He was still able to do lots of things. But I, for all practical purposes, it was my job to run the farm.
Sure. And when did that change from going to the farm to...
Okay. The war ended in... European theater on April 7th, 1945. The war ended in the Pacific theater on August 13th, I believe, in 1945. Both of my brothers had been very active during their military service. Orville served first for 20 months in the Aleutian Islands in Korea. Right after the war started, he went there with his anti-aircraft battalion because they were sure that Japan was going to attempt to take Alaska. Mm-hmm. They didn't. There were some feeble attempts. At one time they shot down a Japanese plane, but there was very little activity that came from that. Mm-hmm. So then he came back for a furlough for 2 weeks, and then he got infantry training and was sent to Europe and fought with General Patton's army in the battles of Germany and France, and mm-hmm. when the war ended, he was in Austria, mm-hmm. in Linz, Austria. My other brother served with the Marines in the Pacific, fought very difficult battles in Guam, Saipan, Tinian, mm-hmm. some of those places.
Sure.
And so both of them had high point value mm-hmm. When the war finally did end. They were discharged quite quickly. Orville came home in late September of 1945. Calmer came home in late October of 1945. And my intent had always been to go to college. So when they came home, I anticipated that I would be drafted. But in the meantime, they now took over the farm, mm-hmm. and I enrolled in college in January of 1946. In February, I received my draft notice. I asked for a deferment until I finished the semester, which mm-hmm. was granted. So then I entered the military service in June of 1946. I did two months, 8 weeks of basic training in mm-hmm. At Fort Knox in the field artillery. Mm-hmm. I was sent home for a 10-day furlough, and then we rode by train both back from Fort Knox and to Fort Lawton, Washington. And from Fort Lawton, Washington, I was shipped to Korea. And that was where I served the rest of my service time.
Okay. What was that like when you got to Korea?
It was, for me, it was fascinating and very interesting. A very different culture, of course, mm-hmm. than I was used to. But we learned very quickly that the Korean people were very happy to have the American, and not only American, there were the other forces there too besides ours mm-hmm. in the occupation from the England and other parts of the groups that we had served with mm-hmm. in the European theater and in the Pacific theater. At any rate, they were delighted to have us, and we did our jobs. I became a teletype operator. But in my experience of moving around the community, we found the people, and especially the children, very happy to see mm-hmm. the military, very happy to talk to them. They spoke English very well. So it was a great experience for me. I have nothing but good things to say about my military experience.
Can you tell us more about the work that you did in Korea?
I had trained, as I've already told you, in the field artillery and basic mm-hmm. training. But when I came to Korea, they did some evaluations, and they determined that I would serve better in the Signal Corps. I was a good typist. I had taken typing in high school, mm-hmm. and they were looking for someone who would operate a teletype machine. And a number of us were transferred from the field artillery into the Signal Corps, and I was one of them. So I served my time in Korea as a teletype operator. We had operations in Japan and now it slips me, the one island, large island off Japan, which was one of the battlefields in World War II. Hopefully it'll come back to mm-hmm. me before
sure.
I'm through. But so we would be in contact with them. Mm-hmm. All our messages were in script or, code. Mm-hmm. So we never knew what, we did to a degree, but we had to send them out in code. We didn't type words
sure.
as such on
okay.
the teletype operator. We typed letters in groups of four.
Okay.
And that was the code messages that were sent out on the teletype machines.
Mm-hmm. Can you recall all this time later, certain people that you worked with?
I can't recall names.
Okay.
Which I have difficulty with now, especially.
Mm-hmm.
I can recall individuals, especially my captain, who would come around only occasionally,
mm-hmm.
but who I've enjoyed, liked mm-hmm. very much. We had a technical sergeant in our unit who was basically in charge of our room. We'd have a large room, maybe 20 by 30, filled with teletype machines.
Mm-hmm.
And it was his responsibility to be sure that everything was moving along okay. And we couldn't use the teletype machines for our own use.
Sure.
They were strictly for the military. I wish I could recall names of people, mm-hmm. but I can't.
Sure.
I recall some of the my buddies in the barracks. Wayne Duke
mm-hmm.
from Connecticut was one of them. An unusual name, and probably why I remember it. Luke Brown, who was another one of the fellows who was in our barracks, but not, he didn't work on the station with me, so I mm-hmm. didn't get to know him as well. So individuals such as this, I recall, and we would take walks together. We'd go hiking in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Seoul was pretty well surrounded by mountains. We found this fascinating to do on a day off or an afternoon mm-hmm. free.
How long were you in Korea?
Only for 10 months. The military was asking us to join the regular army. They said, if you join the regular army, we guarantee that you'll be home in 18 months. And a lot of fellows did, but a lot of us didn't. We decided we're going to stay as draftees and not join the regular army. And it turned out that about the spring of 1947, as I recall the time, about 2 months before I was shipped home, it probably was a little bit earlier, maybe about February, we found out that they were going to start dismissing the draftees.
Mm-hmm.
By now, they had discovered they had more military than they needed. And so not only from Korea, but from Japan, from Germany, from mm-hmm. Okinawa. Oh, Okinawa was the island I was trying to think of where we
sure.
had a teletype station. From all over the world where our troops were stationed, they were finding they had more military than they needed.
Mm-hmm.
So they decided to dismiss first the draftees who hadn't committed to a certain training. So I came there about September 1st, 1946, and I left there about May 15th, 1947. So mm-hmm. it was a period of about a little less than 10 months.
Good for you.
Yeah,
what was that like when you found out that after?
Well, it was very exciting.
Sure.
I had a girlfriend at home that I was writing to. We weren't anywhere near consideration of marriage,
mm-hmm.
but nevertheless, I wanted to go to college. She wanted to go to nursing school,
mm-hmm.
But we corresponded. Of course, I was happy to go mm-hmm. back to see her. I was very happy to go back to see my family.
Sure.
So it was a thrill. And so we went on a ship back, made a stop at Hawaii for about a week to pick up dependents of mm-hmm. some army people and
mm-hmm.
in Hawaii. And then I was shipped back to Stoneman, California, Camp Stoneman, California. Mm-hmm. And that's where I received my dismissal from the army.
And then what happened? What was next in store for you?
Okay. First of all, a good friend of mine from from the Army, and I decided that we wanted to see part of California before we went home. Mm-hmm. So for about a week, we Camp Stillman was, in San Francisco. So we spent a little bit of time there, and then we went to Los Angeles and Hollywood and visited some of the places of interest there. Then we took a train back to Minnesota, and I knew I was going back to college in the fall. So I got home in the middle of June, right for harvest time. So, of course, I went to work on the farm until late August when I went back to college.
And where did you go to college?
Luther College in Decorah, Iowa.
Okay. And what were you studying?
I had a major in business education and a minor in history and a minor in education teaching. Mm-hmm. And then after 4 years of college, I started teaching in southeastern Minnesota.
And how long did you teach?
From 1950 until 1982, 32 years I was in education. I was a teacher for several years. I was a high school principal for several years, and then I was a superintendent of schools for 26 years.
Okay. Wow, that's wonderful. Are there any stories that you would like to share that stand out before we...
About the military?
Yeah, about the military, yeah. Or anything after the military that you would like to share with us?
Yeah. One thing that I have mentioned already that the young children, all the young, but especially the junior high and high school age students. We'd go for a walk. We'd always go when we'd go hiking. We'd always go as a group. Mm-hmm. For one thing, we enjoyed that. We had friends. We could enjoy the trip more. And the Army recommended we do this. There were very few problems in Korea at that time, at least, with getting along with the Korean people. As I've already mentioned, they loved having us. But there were exceptions. Part of it probably caused by the military. Some of the men in the military were dating the Korean girls. Mm-hmm. A lot of that was happening. And in some cases, they were causing pregnancies. We heard stories that some of the Koreans were very upset that this was happening. It was very contrary to their culture. Mm-hmm. And there'd be occasions when GIs, especially individually, who were visiting homes or bars and could get in fights or conflicts with the Korean. So they said, if you go any place, I think they were thinking especially more of the dangers of bars and that kind of thing. But go hiking, go with a group of fellows. Mm-hmm. So we would do that. And this one time we went to a place called the Thousand Steps. Very interesting. There were actually 1,000 steps to climb to the height of this particular high hill or mountain, whichever you want to call it. It was part of a mountain, but part kind of to one star, to one level. And when we got to the top, here was a group of young boys, I would say from maybe ages 12 or 14 to 16 and maybe 18, about six of them. And they just started following us. We had a group of about seven or eight boys, army guys, and they were up there on the hike. And we realized it was getting late, and we had done a lot of walking. It was too far to go back the way we had come, we thought it would be difficult to find our way in the dark. Mm-hmm. So we headed to a part of the city that none of us knew before. And we asked these boys, we told them that where we were and where we live, and would they be willing to walk with us and take us there? Oh, sure, we'll do that. So, and once we got down in this area, some really slummy areas, there were not a lot of beautiful homes in Korea. Mm-hmm. There were some very lovely homes, mm-hmm. mostly not the real large homes, although there were some of those too. But at any rate, in this particular area, it would be like the old Washington Avenue in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And we were scared. We really were. And we were so happy that we had these boys leading us to take us home. We didn't bother anyone. Mm-hmm. We just kept on going.
Yeah.
And I've never forgotten it, because to us it was a bit traumatic. I don't think the boys even sensed it. They didn't know that why we were so anxious to have them show us the way.
Sure.
Well, we were anxious not only because we were sure weren't sure that we could find the way, but also we didn't want to be caught up with some diligence or something in Korea that weren't happy to see us in their area. There were very interesting places to visit in Korea. Seoul, the city we were stationed in, was the capital city.
Mm-hmm.
Many beautiful pagodas, mm-hmm. temples, shrines. Their religion, of course, is of that serving that those are part of their worship places, and climbing the mountains we enjoyed. We go to the capital, so we took good advantage of being there. And then we had some interesting stories. We had some friends. Seoul, Korea is not very far from the 38th parallel.
Mm-hmm.
The 38th parallel is what divided North and South Korea. We had friends that we had learned to know in our basic training,
mm-hmm.
who were on the south side of the parallel and were doing some training of their own, to protect South Korea from North Korea.
Sure.
At the same time, they could watch the North Koreans with full military training, mm-hmm. From the Chinese who were coming down there and training them. And so it was not a great big surprise to me when the Korean War started. You sure. kind of sensed that it was something that they were building up for already, mm-hmm. when we were there. And this was in 1946 and 47.
Sure.
The Korean War started in 1951.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, did you go to any reunions after the military?
No, that's one thing I have missed. We, you know, I think part of it is the short time we were together. The group that we were in basic training with, the Fort Knox, really split up. I remember when they were posting the assignments were going to be sent, and our battalion of, not our battalion, our company of probably about 200 men was being assigned, and they posted on the bulletin boards where everyone was going.
Mm-hmm.
We all wanted to go to Europe, especially Germany.
Mm-hmm.
I especially wanted to. Very few were sent to Europe. Most of us were sent to Japan or Korea, mm-hmm. or Okinawa.
Interesting.
And so that was a disappointment to me at the time. Since, you know, I had a great experience there, and I have since had a chance to visit Europe, and mm-hmm. I was kind of glad that I had had a chance to serve in Korea.
Sure.
But at the time, it was not what we wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to go to Europe.
Mm-hmm. But no doubt after 10 months and being told to go, you could go home, that had to have been just really a...
Oh, yeah, that was very exciting. Yeah. Again, I didn't finish telling you why, probably why, we were never a group that got together afterward. Because we knew each other for a short period of time, especially for myself, who was only in the military for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent, you know, the 2 months in basic training, and after that, I think there were only a handful of us that from that group that went from my unit and basic training that went to Korea.
Sure.
I remember about four of us. And then when we got to Korea, we were assigned different units there. I went to the Signal Corps. The other three fellows, two of them stayed in the Signal, in the field artillery, and one was sent to the infantry. And so I was only with the unit then in Korea for about 8 months. And we didn't get those close bonds.
Yeah.
The fellows that served together on one plane, for example, and they'd fly one forward after the other back and forth to Germany and bombing Germany, and they got so close that it was just common for them to start a group that would meet. We didn't have that closeness because we weren't together that long.
That makes sense. Now when you say that. Verdi, how would you like to be remembered?
Okay. I'm uncomfortable with that. I really start off trying to write something.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I don't want to be critical of, this is so often asked for, and I don't want to be critical of those who give a very good statement, you know.
Sure.
And I'm uncomfortable with it. I feel almost like I'm boasting a little bit, or I lose my humility, I think, when I try to say something that when here's what I wrote down. I hope I will be remembered as someone who lived to honor first his God, and second his family. Now that's where I feel.
Mm-hmm.
I went on to say, someone who lived and worked in a way that showed respect and honor to everyone, no matter their stature in life. And these are things that I feel.
Mm-hmm.
But when I put them down in a statement as something that I'm saying that how I want to be remembered, I feel almost like I'm boastful, like I'm saying that these were things that I did. You've got to try and do as well, because I'm not at all sure those things are really completely true.
Mm-hmm.
Our family is very close, and not just my personal family, but my siblings, my family of eight children, and my mom and dad, and our whole relationship, the uncles and aunts, and a very close family.
Mm-hmm.
All of my grandparents were born in Norway, and I think this must have something to do with it. Not that Norwegians do these things any better than others, but all of my grandparents that I know are of the same kind of training and background.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them were happy in America, but they also longed for those days that they spent back in Norway. That was my dad was born in Norway and came from this country when he was 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't remember a lot about it. But an awful lot of people came, you know, when they were in their teens, their 20s, and even older. And they remembered what Norway was like. And although they were pleased to be in America, they could have work opportunities and so forth, but they still were longing for the old country. I think my family background, the closeness comes partly from that, because we were of the same all the same backgrounds, and our families have just remained amazingly close. Mm-hmm. And so that's a very important part of my life to me.
Sure.
Still, it remains now, and I feel my grandchildren still, they're scattered all over the world. I have one in Hawaii and one in Boston and two in Florida and, you know, two in Colorado and a couple mm-hmm. in Minnesota, three in Minnesota. But I'm in contact with them really quite frequently. Mm-hmm. I don't get to see them as often anymore.
Sure.
But emailing or, you know, a telephone call or letters. Mm-hmm. And I'm not into texting, so I'm staying away from that. That's something I'm not quite want to, don't quite abuse. That part of my culture.
Well, thank you, Verdi.
Oh, you're welcome.